Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 31st of May. I'm Phil Carroll.
I'm Kevin Hornsby.
I'm Charles Archer.
And it is a special day today, the 31st of May. Kev informs me it is, I believe, the Roast's fifth birthday. So happy birthday, Roast.
Yeah, happy birthday, the Sunday Roast. 5 years and 5 years since we started the company. It was a few months before that that we started a few podcasts, I think. But yeah, 5 years to change the world, or maybe not.
Yeah, I'm sure some would agree and some probably wouldn't. But yeah, it's gone quick as well. I was looking back at certain sort of podcasts this week, actually, and just how kind of the landscape has changed since we, you know, since we started. And I guess we came in a bull market, didn't we, during the sort of the COVID craze of all the, you know, the testing stocks, Novacyt, and we saw some incredible rises, you know, 800% some days, I remember. And then obviously we went into the market crash, you know, the time when it obviously COVID then happened and it crashed the market. And then ultimately it feels like we've been in a massive bear market for the last probably 3 or 4 years. And now we're seeing massive signs of moving, you know, we've moved back into a bull market. So yeah, a big, big sort of roller coaster ride is the way I'd sum up those 5 years.
I just think it's kind of fun because like it's very easy in a bull market for everybody to be right all of the time because, you know, I think like a good measure of it is you go, wow, you know, my portfolio was up like 20% this year, but like, you know, the market average is like 57%. So actually you're just shit at stock picking. And vice versa, in a bear market, did your company survive it? Is basically the only question, right? Did the majority of the companies that you back and work with survive the bear market? Because they'll then get the bull market rush, or did they not? And it's, you know, the bear market stuff, it's funny because the bull market is the funnest bit. But for us, the bear market, or for me anyway, is the best part because it's when you get to pick up the shares super cheaply. No one's interested in them. And you know, it's where you make your killing. Whereas ironically, it's in the bull market like we have now. Everyone wants to invest in everything all of the time with all their money. But you could have bought all of this stuff a year or two ago, you know, for like 1,000% less. It's market psychology. Super fun. I can see you nodding your head, Phil.
Yeah, I'm just enjoying it because it's been emotional, really, hasn't it? And it is, investing is emotional, and it's better when you remove the emotion from it. But it feels good to actually start seeing some signs of positivity in the markets. You know, we talked about IPOs. It feels like we're being offered them, you know, almost one or two a week at the moment.
It's just insane, isn't it? I've got 19 IPOs, pre-IPOs, RTOs. You know, for perspective, we had what, 4 last year, total market maybe? Like it's just, the demand is just off the scale. It does make me a little bit nervous, obviously, when that kind of optimism comes back. But at the same time, you know, I think it's just there's so much money swirling around looking for a home, and everything seems so overvalued that some of it's just coming back to what looks like good value, and that's small caps. It's simple.
You're going to go into SpaceX IPO then, which is probably going to be one of the biggest of all time.
I think it'll rocket and then absolutely crash.
Pardon the pun.
Look at the Meta IPO, for example. Meta Platforms, Facebook, like it did well initially, and then it crashed, 50% pretty quickly. I think SpaceX is horrendously overvalued. What I think is probably better bets, and I won't name them because I'm doing the research now. There's a number, some actually London listed, of SpaceX related stocks that have market caps, you know, 1-2 billion or less, you know, compared to like this is going to list at maybe $2 trillion. And those companies have just phenomenal, you know, uprating potential. SpaceX actually rely on the suppliers and they don't actually have any alternatives. And if they were listed in the US, they would be 10, 20x what they currently are here, but they're not. And when those names start to kind of crop about as they do the investor roadshow, I suspect some of them have already started moving, but I think there's going to be a load of money to be made on those companies. And you know who you are. If you're listening, contact us because we want to talk to you.
Yeah,
indeed. I think the whole SpaceX thing, it goes back to what was said a few times, I think, is that when it lists, there's going to be a minuscule amount of stock available. All the ETFs have got to go and hold it in proportion to its valuation on the market, and it's going to go up, which is ridiculous, but that's what's going to happen.
It's not, though, is it? Because it's just supply and demand, and we saw this with European Green Transitions IPO recently. where everybody got the stock at 6p and nobody sold and it went to 9p very, very quickly. Delta Gold is another example. People in the pre-IPO, the vast majority have not sold their shares and it shot up. Simple as that. So take that dynamic and apply it to something that's going to be valued at $2 trillion. People talk about the market valuations of like 1, 2 trillion as though they're kind of set in stone. They're not. It's just what the sort of 1% of shares traded on the day at that particular share price times 100 is. You couldn't sell the whole of SpaceX for $2 trillion to anybody, but you can sell 1% of the shares on any given day at that valuation. However, there's two things here to bear in mind in terms of risk. The first is the actual valuation is mental in terms of their revenue versus what they're going to list at. But also, the lockup periods are not particularly long. A lot of those shares are going to unlock, and people are going to want to take equity off the table. And the final thing is they're ch basically changing the rules to allow SpaceX to be immediately admitted into the ETFs, which for me smells like corruption, basically. And I could say it on a small cap podcast, but basically it means all of that ETF money is going to buy up all the SpaceX shares, and then there's going to be exit liquidity for people who've been in it for many, many years. And let's say you're a SpaceX employee, close to the start of the company, and you've got shares, and now they're worth hundreds of millions, or technically, even junior employees, millions of pounds. You're going to want to cash them out, aren't you? You just are. So it'll
You're
be
certainly going to
interesting to
want to
see.
cash some of them out, that's for sure.
Okay, so if I share this photo, this is something that's broken the internet this week. I don't know if you've
Yeah, it's the
seen it.
most obscene looking Ferrari I've ever seen in my entire
Yeah,
life.
so the Ferrari Luce, which means what? Luce means what in
Light.
Charles? Yeah, light. So basically, this is the. I would like to say it's a concept car because it looks like a concept car, but it's actually going to make production in this final format. And if you can't, obviously, you can't see anything, but just Google Ferrari Luce if you haven't seen it. I'm surprised because most people who use social media will see millions of memes that have been created because it was launched in Rome this week. And the internet broke because people were. Absolutely horrified by what Ferrari has designed here. So basically it's the designed by former Apple executive Johnny Ive and Mark Newsom, and I think really it's Ferrari's first full EV car, but in reality it's aimed at tech bros, isn't it? Silicon Valley, because Ferrari's renowned for emotions and bleeding edge technology. They get the best out of a small engine in terms of power, but do you think, I suppose, do you think it's the
Piece of
design of it and
shit.
looks? Yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts?
It's a piece of shit. When you want to get in a Ferrari, Phil, and I know you've been in more than most. Yeah, there's two things that you want. You want heritage, which is the way it looks. Yeah, and you want the sound. You want that engine that makes you feel alive. And this piece of crap has got. Apparently, this is literally. I'm on its website now. An artificially amplified, bespoke electric soundtrack generated by sensors. And I kind of like no. No, it's kind of like you're paying the premium to go to a concert, but instead they're sticking on like a radio, like a cassette that's like slightly scratched, and it just looks sort of, the share price what dropped 10% in a day, and it's kind of Ferrari shares have not been doing well for a long time anyway. But you're kind of okay. Let's put it another way: when you go to one of your car shows, how would you feel driving up in that?
You'd feel like an absolute muppet, wouldn't you? I mean, the
Yeah.
reality is I was hurt. Somebody, I know someone who went to the launch in Rome, and they said that they've never been under more of an NDA in their life with Ferrari. They had to sign an NDA that said that all the footage was embargoed until a specific time. And if they release the footage before the embargo date, they would have to pay 600,000 euros to Ferrari. Not only that, Charles, they also had the material on their memory sticks held by Ferrari so they could vet what they
What
were
is
saying. I mean, what?
this?
It's an abomination. Like, it is
How
an
do you?
absolute joke.
Oh, come on. I mean, it's the same as a Jaguar, right? Like, how much did their sales crash in a year? I think it was 99% because nobody wanted one. It's the same as that. I mean, I don't know what these companies think because ultimately, when you want, like for example, the old Ferrari Daytona, right? The classic, just remake that and re-release it and maybe it would sell out immediately. Do you know? I mean, like,
Don't
one of
worry
the.
anyway, you won't be able to drive it because the Pope's got the steering wheel anyway.
Yeah. €550,000. There's no wait list like on other models whereby, or wait list whereby you have to buy six or seven other models of Ferrari to get on the list for one. I think it's aimed at tech bros, Silicon Valley. Ferrari are saying that 80% of the customers of this car will be new customers, i.e., people who, and one of the guys summed it up, he said the people who love the product were wearing Apple smartwatches, and the ones who were wearing analog, decent Tag and Rolexes were actually the ones who'd hated the car. So I think there's a correlation. I think it is
I
aimed at
think,
the tech bros from
yeah, but
Silicon
I
Valley.
mean, there's a fucking business strategy consultant, and I've met enough of these people who've come into Ferrari and gone, look, if you make a car that has nothing to do with your heritage and doesn't sound like a Ferrari and doesn't look like a Ferrari, and you slap your badge on it, then these tech bros are going to buy it. And I don't buy that. They're saying it's going to be like the vast majority of new customers. You might find that you don't have any new customers, like Jaguar did, and then all your old customers abandon you. Because even if you're not driving a Ferrari, it's associated with something that's just
I
not
think you're right.
good.
I think that Luca di Montezemolo, the previous CEO, said this is an abomination. You will kill the brand if you release this vehicle. And I
Yeah,
think in
and
a
just.
way, I mean, why didn't they just brand it like the Apple car because it was former, and then say powered by Ferrari or something? You know what I
Well, I
mean?
think
Like a different.
it's you know, okay, so the vast majority of people who own a supercar. People might not realize this, but the vast majority are not fabulously wealthy, so they own one supercar, right? And obviously, hopefully, you go on to own sort of like five or ten, but actually, most people just have one. And if you're just picking one, it doesn't like there's quite a few brands on the market, and it doesn't take much to discount one of them. It's as simple as that, really. And you're buying a new car, are you gonna you're gonna get something that's associated with that? No. Yeah, Lamborghini is the way forward currently.
Absolutely. Okay, so we've got US Iran ceasefire extension. Biggest macro story. Markets rallied hard after reports that Washington and Tehran have agreed to extend the ceasefire and begin further talks. We talk about this every week. What's happening, Charles? Are we going to see some sort of ceasefire and an end to this?
Well, ultimately, they say there's a ceasefire, and then the Iranians try and lay a mine, and the US decides to send a bomb. It's, I mean, ultimately, the strait has to open, because if it doesn't, then we have total economic collapse ahead. And the pressure being put on Iran by China, for example, to get it up and running is just so extreme. Like it will open, and the only question that Iran has to, needs to have is are they going to open it under reasonable terms of effective peace and ceasefire, or are they going to open it after a US land invasion? Because it has to open. So those are the only two choices. And I think for Iran, there's a danger of overplaying your hand, because obviously it's very cheap and very easy for them to keep it closed as long as the US doesn't do a land invasion. But if the US does go down that route, Iran will crumble immediately. So, I think it will reopen, and I think it probably will reopen under a ceasefire slash peace deal treaty. And then it'll be one of those things where it's like, oh, it's 30 days or 60 days. And then, like, the tariffs will just roll on for the next like 400 years, and it'll be fine. I think hopefully by the end of June, the strait is open, and this is behind us. The other thing I would say on the geopolitics front is Taiwan is looking riskier in terms of China looking at it, but Russia and Ukraine, in my mind, I think we're actually quite close to a peace deal behind the scenes. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the headlines and what's it, obviously the war is still ongoing. But it seems like Russia in particular has just had enough and has decided potentially if it can just control the land it's already taken, that's enough. So it'll be interesting to see. But you can imagine a market reaction when the strait reopens and Russia and Ukraine sign a peace deal in the next few weeks, which is not a prediction, but something that I think is very possible. And that'd be quite good for the markets.
Very,
Just
very
in time for
good.
SpaceX.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Labour under increasing pressure. Government-backed report warns Britain could see 1.25 million young people not in employment, education, or training within a few years. It comes as Labour faces growing criticism over economic growth, welfare policy, and employment costs. Plenty of material for a debate on whether Britain is heading towards a productivity crisis. I mean, this is an interesting one, isn't it? Because there was a few interviews this week, and they were saying that there really isn't a lot of prospects for young people in this current climate right now. And is it because young people are lazy? They don't want to work for, manual labor or whatever that is? Or do you think we genuinely have a lack of jobs for that demographic?
I mean, young people have been blamed forever for being lazy or useless, going back to the days of Plato. I would say that there's quite a few components going on here. I would say the first thing is the number of people not in our social circle who work full time and then get a part-time job to top up their hours because they literally don't have enough money is a lot higher than you might think. So you've got, Brenda, who's 44, taking a job that 16-year-old John probably should have had sort of 10, 15 years ago. You have people not retiring at all. you obviously had like a mass amount of immigration, most of it low skilled, so that a lot of those jobs are going to immigrants. And you can argue with toss about whether that's good for GDP or not, but obviously, if you're a 16-year-old, 17-year-old looking for a Saturday job, it's not good for you individually. But I think the biggest thing is you've put up, not employer national insurance, you put up minimum wage. And the relative value, there's two aspects. The first is if you're hiring somebody and the cost of a 30-year-old is the same as a 17-year-old, you'll hire the 30-year-old with experience every time. And the second thing is there's many, many businesses who simply can't afford the minimum wage. But when you add in national insurance, it's basically £15 an hour, right? And the marginal, so but my we have a local shop down the road, and I help do their accounts before they're sent off to be signed off by an accountant. And it's very, very simple, right? Like it's not very complex stuff. We worked out that they can probably pay a member of staff to do like part-time hours, like 16 hours a week, about £7.50 an hour, which is obviously illegal. So they don't hire the member of staff, but there's no shops for 2 miles around. And if you could advertise at £7.50 an hour, I would guarantee you there'd be 100 teenagers who take that job immediately, but they literally can't. They can't pay the money. And you can say, well, if they can't pay that, then they shouldn't be open. They shouldn't have a business. But they literally can't afford to pay more. So there's no point arguing that. It literally, the money isn't there, so the job doesn't exist. And I wonder if minimum wage didn't exist, and I can hear the cries and screams from here already, how many more jobs, particularly in rural areas where there are no other employment, would exist because they'd suddenly become viable. And if you're sort of 17 and you have no experience, even like if you go work in a restaurant, right? It take a couple of years before you're up to scratch knowing what you're doing. You don't actually earn your money properly for the first year or two. And that's bit. And then add into the fact that degrees are basically worthless now unless you're in specific fields. And artificial intelligence taking all of the jobs. My only advice to a young person, I would say listening in on this, is I kind of graduated into the global financial crisis, and I went and was a teacher for a year. And they're always crying out for teachers, and it's very easy to get on a PGCE course. So do that, get qualified, and then you can generally transfer into other stuff quite easily.
I think you're right. I also think there's a lack of skilled trades. Like they brought these T levels in, didn't they? Which I think, I left school, did well, I did my A levels, and then I went into an apprenticeship and learned a trade. And I think there's a lot of people go to uni and they do something which isn't, it's not how you can't get an art in a job in particularly European history or politics. So end up there's a massive glut of graduates there looking for only a few jobs. And they've wasted 4 years. Would you rather be have 4 years working in a company and learning a trade? I don't know. I just
Well,
feel like
I
it's.
think that purely from a financial perspective, if you're doing something that's, if you're smart, like properly academically gifted, then you should go to
Yeah,
university.
and you're
If
training
you,
for like a lawyer or a bar or a
yeah, but
doctorate.
even
Yeah.
like, okay, it's a classic. There's four law graduates for every law training contract.
Yeah.
So 75% of people doing a law degree will not become lawyers.
It's incredible.
So if you're in that top 25% and because you can look at your exam results, right, from school, then go for it. But if you're not, if you're a B grade student, then you're just going to waste your money. And what is, irritates me is people talk about sort of like a 9% marginal rate if you go to university, right? And a 15% if you do postgrad. But actually, if you start work at 18 and get any job, right, on minimum wage and live at home for those 3 years, it cripples you a little bit in terms of social development. But you can build up a house deposit in 3 years
Yeah.
while someone at university is losing a house deposit in debt.
Yeah, it's the
So,
debted thing, isn't it?
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, gold obviously continues to trade at the, historically elevated levels, and investors looking for the next generation of discoveries, explorers are becoming increasingly important. Producing mines are struggling to replace reserves. Majors need new projects, and that means successful exploration stories can create enormous value. One company looking to capitalize on that opportunity is Hamac Gold. So that brings us on to our first guest this week. Hamac Strategy has uncovered a substantial historical exploration data set for its Akoko gold project in Ghana, revealing multiple high-grade gold intersections and expanding its understanding of the project's mineralization. The newly acquired drilling and soil sampling data highlights near-surface gold mineralization with potential for both shallow oxide resources and a deeper sulfide source. Hamac plans follow-up drilling to verify the historical results, while its current drilling program continues to advance the project towards an independent mineral resource estimate and preliminary economic assessment. We're joined by CEO and Executive Director Carl Smithson. So, welcome back to the podcast, Carl.
Welcome, Carl. Welcome again to the Sunday roast. We're just basically going on the results that came out on Thursday, which I mean, a bit of a su surprise to me, obviously, because you weren't drilling in this particular area, but the Akoko Gold Project in Ghana. And just for people to understand, Ghana does produce a hell of a lot of gold in Africa. I mean, it is one of the highest gold producing areas in Africa. But you've managed to get some data that was done, and I'll ask you a few more questions about how it came about that you got that. But these are including intercepts of 15.44 grams per ton over 12 meters, 8.99 grams per ton over 7 meters, and 21.4 grams per ton over 2 meters, with high grade mineralization generally occurring less than 50 meters from the surface. So it's dig up and get the gold, basically. Those are pretty stellar results in anybody's book. So first of all, welcome. Secondly, first question, how did you come across these results?
Hi, morning, Kevin. Basically, we found out that we had an original database actually with our partners that ran all work done up to 2016, which included a lot of drilling and sampling and assays and all that kind of thing. And we've been using that to guide our current drilling program on Akoko to basically refine and restate a resource to sort of industry compliance standards. However, we got approached by a geologist who'd actually worked on the project after the data timeframe of the data that we had. There was basically 2 years of work done that, well, we didn't know about it. So, he came to us and said, "Look, I worked on this project. We did quite a bit of drilling and sampling, etc. I've got some data for this, and are you interested?" So, sure enough, we were. So basically, we spoke nicely to the guy and got access to this sort of additional database, which, as you point out, Kevin, shows some very interesting results. Which in parts confirms what we're doing, and in other parts is actually new data, as you pointed out. In areas outside of the existing resource. So sure enough, we've got to do some follow-up and investigate these and basically re-verify that particular data as well, and hopefully it can complement and enhance what we hope to announce in terms of a resource restatement upgrade, if you like, probably in 6 to 8 weeks' time, hopefully, all things being well.
Okay, very good. As soon as that'd be great. From the point of view of this individual, then obviously this individual has quite a lot of experience. So are you going to be able to use his experience over the project and what's actually happening?
He's actually been to the project site already, and just sort of provided his sort of input and comments on what we're doing, and really verifying and endorsing the program. So we'll be using the guy. He's a sort of independent consultant, so highly experienced geologist, Ghanaian in his own right, and will be sort of very useful for us on the project.
Yeah, what are you hoping to achieve then? I mean, obviously you can't give me a number here, but give us a ballpark of what you're hoping that this resource is going to look like.
Well, it's we've kind of keep re reporting. This is we're targeting primarily the shallow oxides, right? The stuff that's near surface, less than 50 meters depth. A gold resource that can be mined through open pit means, very low stripping ratio. It doesn't need to have to be a super stellar grade throughout it, because it's going to be, I believe, quite cost effective to one, develop, and two, operate. Right, when you're working at these shallow levels. So that's the model that we've been following throughout, and that's the model that's been really reconfirmed through the work that we've done so far. We're about halfway through our drilling program as we speak, and we've not had any major surprises on, certainly not on the downside. We've had some nice grades on the upside, as we've previously reported. So we if look if we have something in the region of 200 to 300,000 ounces at a grade of a gram a ton, that's really, really good in anybody's book, because of where the gold price is, and as I say, how you can develop this fairly cheaply. And I've got in the back of my mind something like, let's say, an open pit operation that can run, even if it's just 5, 6, 7 years, turning 30,000 ounces a year. That's super cash flow, right? At what we believe will be attractive operating margins. And you look at where we are now in terms of our market cap and what the kind of cash flow numbers that we will report in a PEA actually, but that we're kind of hoping to get. There's just a massive disconnect between valuation where we are today and what this project hopefully can unlock in the not too distant future.
Yeah, no, if you had 30,000 ounces with a $2,000 profit margin on that, which would put you in an all-in sustaining cost of $2,500, which is probably hideously expensive. It's nowhere near that, I would imagine. You're talking about $60,000 a year. Now, if you got $60,000 a year for even 5 years, wow! Based on a market cap, as you say, of as Charles says, 2 carrots and a potato, which is basically where you are. Fundamentally, people don't understand. You do understand. The gold is in the ground. You are just basically justifying the valuation of that gold, and then hopefully it's a dig it up time, and then process it.
And it's a staged process, over the next, say 6 months. One, we've definitely got to get this resource redefined and, announced to industry compliance standards. Secondly, is the PEA, Prelim Economic Assessment, which is really going to look at the CapEx, OpEx, cash flows, financial model, all that kind of stuff, which we hope to have done and dusted by late summer. And, as these results have been announced and reports have been released, hopefully the market will sit up and take notice. But this is going to lead to the decision point on the acquisition of the asset. We've spoke about this before. It's going to be less than $10 an ounce of gold in the ground, hopefully, which is cheap in anybody's book. So, it's going to be a real value add opportunity for us. And then what do we do with it afterwards? If you get your crystal ball out, we will have optionality, I think, Kevin. We can try and raise the funds to do it ourselves, and we are talking to groups that that can help us with this in terms of maybe royalty or streaming deals. You could maybe look at a joint venture partnership, or maybe you get acquired, or the project will get acquired. You just don't know, right? But the key here is to deliver the project, deliver the value or the see-through value, and then we see where we go from there.
Yeah, but a purchase price of $10 an ounce, and then subsequently, in ground valuation once you've jorked it is probably $100 to $200 to $300 an ounce minimum. Then you're 10, 20, 30 times Xing the value of the project. So yeah, it all looks very positive, and
Well, I would just on that, I'd point the readers or the listeners, sorry, not reading this, to our corporate presentation, which is on the website. And in there's a slide at the back end of the appendix which shows similar transactions in, say, Ghana, Ivory Coast, etc. The stages they were at, what the acquisition price of the asset was, and the sort of equating to a dollar per ounce of gold in the ground, basically a purchase price. And you can see that we're definitely at the bottom of that curve. But as you rightly point out, when you now get to the resource stage, the PEA stage, the pre-development stage, that sort of dollar per ounce value just ramps to 100, 200, 300. You bang on there. So, this is obviously what we keep our eye on, and this is what we're going to be chasing.
And at the end of the day, people also need to understand that through Hamex strategies, you have assets in gold already and in Bitcoin that have an intrinsic value, which is taking part of that 3.5 million market cap already. So yeah, there's a lot of value to be had there. You've got issues, I think, still to overcome, things like the warrants and when they're going to be exercised, and people going through that process. And I think that's a bit of a game of cat and mouse that's happening here. But I think once we get over that situation, then I think prospects look very good.
And just without giving too much away, we are working on that a potential solution to the warrants. Okay, they come live in July, but we'll see what happens before then, right? Without disclosing anything that I shouldn't be at the moment, we are working on something there.
Okay, very good. Interesting to hear. Okay, listen, we won't keep you any longer because I mean, we wanted to keep it short and sweet. We realize these results won't make necessarily a dramatic difference, but it's going to add to that job resource for sure, and that can only add to the game in the long run. So good luck, and we'll hopefully speak to you soon when you have some solid results.
There'll be regular updates for sure. Okay.
That's
Thanks a
great.
lot,
Thanks for
Kevin.
your
All right.
time, Colin.
Cheers. Take care. Bye.
Let's move on to our second guest this week. We're joined by Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Kendrick Resources. Welcome back, Colin. How's life?
Very, very busy. Very busy, but I guess enjoying it, and the bullets are coming from every side, but plenty to do, and plenty of activity and plenty of progress, I'm happy to say.
Absolutely, yeah, and obviously we've seen a couple of RNSs this week from Kendrick. Where the first one, let's just talk about that. We saw the news that they'd raised 1.76 million pounds at 7 pence per share, with participation from directors, a U.S. managed fund, a U.S. family office, and existing shareholders. The fundraising was completed at the market price and a premium to the previous bid price, with proceeds earmarked for advancing the Bonya Rare Earth Project in Namibia, where drilling is underway ahead of a targeted maiden JORC resource in Q3 2026. So, just give us an update on the rationale behind the raise, Colin, please.
Well, obviously, you know that you can't do these programs on fresh air and smoke. So we raised the minimum, you know that, but we raised enough. We're pretty sure to get us to our first maiden JORC resource to do our basic metallurgical test work, and so that money's going to go a long way. And we certainly weren't going to overraise, and we're going to protect everybody against dilution. We didn't want a discounted raise. We certainly didn't want warrants. And the very fact that US institutions wanted to come in was an absolute blessing. You know, let's face it, that's where the quest, that's the where the need, that's where the most of the noise is coming from about rare earths and the recognition that they're absolutely short of supply. So to be connected to a US institution and family office was, you know, was just basically the motivator, if you like, the trigger to do the raise.
Absolutely. And obviously, we also saw the news that there was a review of the flagship Teufelskuppen and Kieser Hose rare earth projects. And I think one of the standout figures there was the fact that the review identified a gross in-house project valuation of around $400 million for the verified near-surface mineralized carbonatite. So just talk us through those numbers. I mean, that literally is just for the near-surface assets.
That's correct. And you know, anybody who wants to sort of challenge, oh, how on earth can you manage that? You know, we know the mining cost for the area, and as I say, it's quarrying, it's not even mining. We know the grade, we've got comparables in the industry. We've got metallurgical test work, which gave us a good idea of what the shape of the plant would be. So our CapEx numbers we were pretty comfortable with. So there's your answer, that with that being very conservative. With just that drone survey and estimation of on surface resources, we were able to get at that valuation of 400 million. And obviously, that's just, as I keep using the word, and I think it's because of the way they present themselves. They call them actually inverted ice cream cones, but I call them icebergs. It's just the tip of the iceberg. So there's a lot more to come, Kevin. We've proven that it actually goes below surface. You know that we're going to be intensifying our drilling. Reverse circulation is about to start. We'll have three machines going shortly. So to get at that, and channel sampling is going at a great rate of knots, cleaning up old channels and trenches and resampling them. And you know what's the best news of all, Phil? I think I mentioned it in one of your podcasts. I think I mentioned it talking about some other project that. What we miners look for is probably a little bit different than what the market might look for. I look for the, if I get very much of the same in every hole, I'm delighted. I can plan around that. Can't plan around troughs and spikes. It's difficult. And what we're seeing with this project, what we're seeing with this project is so amazingly consistent at 3 to 3.5 TREO. You know, it's quite remarkable. Trenches, drill holes, whatever you do, you're getting very, you know, extremely consistent. So, that's the biggest joy to me at the moment. But what we've got to do is get to that maiden resource. You're not convincing until you've got a maiden resource. That indicative value is derived from raw data and existing data and looking across the industry, but specifically at mining costs within Namibia. So you can put some reliance on it. And I guess that we want to really do that peer analysis and as we go along in life, where make sure we position this. And that we meet our claims. And our claims, you know very well, our claims are that I've probably been a bit more boisterous, but it's certainly what in the top three undeveloped projects on the globe. So I'm not going to back off that. And I'm not going to repeat, but I think I thought it to be a little bit outlandish when I said I think it's probably one of the best emerging, if not the best emerging rare earth projects in the world. We'll back off that one for the time being. Time will tell. But it's certainly in the very top tier. And it's certainly in the top three of the undeveloped rare earth properties in the world.
Very good. It was good, Colin, to see that we got some institutions involved. And ultimately, I suppose I'd like to ask you the question, how did you come about getting the money from these institutions?
Well, you know, when you've got a project like that, the phone rings a lot more than you know, and you're not hitting the buttons, you're picking the telephone up. So I'm not allowed to say too much. But I think that you can. I've done quite a bit of work before in placings, and you run across as a small company, you run across the major issue, and that major issue is that you walk into a fund manager, and totally different to anywhere else I've been in the world. I'll take the lot. And you don't want that, of course. You can't take the lot because then they've got another limitation. They can't go above 10%. So this was a fund manager who personally didn't want to put it before his investment company, hadn't got him information. We obviously hadn't got the time. He didn't want to go up to 10% until he seen it. So this was, if you want, their joining the club. I think as this project advances, that institution will certainly be there. And if everything goes according to what I'm saying, you know, may wish to be a cornerstone, who knows? And family offices, well, we all know about family offices. They're always seeking and looking out for very good opportunities. So as much as anything, we didn't go out and seek them. They came and they came to find us.
So what can we expect in the next few weeks? Are we going to have more drill results from the drills that have already happened?
Much of the same. There's core still to be, this core still to be XRF'd. There's trenches to be XRF'd. There's channels to be XRF'd. There's new holes to be drilled. We got the holes stuck in a, we got the rod stuck in a void. We fished them, so we've got to finish that up with an hole to finish off. And there's so much going on. It can't be true, but it's. It can be summed up by very much the same, but faster.
Very good.
And the objective is that maiden resource. That maiden resource. That's the objective.
Yeah. And just one quick question, because obviously these two things are both happening in Namibia. We saw some pictures of the camp starting to be built up there in Hope and Gorup. So, can you just give us a few sentences on what you think's happening there?
Oh yeah. Well, that's going apace. We had to fix up the road because if you've got a really long low bed, you'll find it balancing on one of the umps. So we had to grade all the umps out. So we had to do a lot of road regrading. So it's a very, very nice road now. So yesterday there was 200 tons of concrete taken out of there, and 30 containers. Just that's in one day. And so that's the plant very much. Sorry, what am I talking about? That's the mess. The mess, the sleeping accommodation, the kitchens and whatever you, that's all being put in place as we sit here. We're working away on the plant. That's working. Steinhardt, I think, will be delivering the ore sorter at the beginning of June. And we're actually very, very bullish on being on budget, on time. When I talk about budget, I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about actually getting into copper. Because let's face it, with this copper price, the sooner we're producing some, the better. But very, very bullish on it. No hiccups. I'm looking around for wood to touch at this stage. But no hiccups other than the ones you'd during the normal course of the day. But no real setbacks.
Okay. I think we'll say on that note, Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Kendrick Resources, thanks very much for appearing on the podcast.
Always nice, always good to be on the podcast, and let's hope that Kendrick continues, and I know it will, and I'm determined it will, to continue to sort of give the market what it wants, and let's hope Namibia is going to be a front runner in this quest for rare earths. We're very excited about this project. Actually, my biggest job is tempering my excitement, not I don't need much to motivate it, frankly, Phil. So thank you very much, gents. Thank you.
Cheers, Colin.
Cheers. All the very best. Bye-bye.
Okay, so let's have a look at some of the movers and shakers of the week. What have we got on the... I guess the biggest story that I've got on my notes is Kendrick Resources. They announced a $1.76 million fundraise there. Do you want to add any comments on that one, Charles?
Yeah, I think the key thing is, for me, I mean, we talk about the size of the grade and the metallurgy. And the metallurgy and the mineralogy, those are the things that we, you know, work needs to be done on. So that's your risk element there. But the size and the grade, I think, can't be contested now. There was a lot of people saying, oh, that, you know, Bird is going to do a horrendous discounted fundraise. And to be fair, I mean, there's been history of those in the past. Instead, we got a fundraise at a small premium, you know, supported by a US fund and a US strategic. Now, was it for a small amount of money? Yes, but they didn't want any more money than that. That's all they needed. And, you know, for me anyway, you're sitting there. That basically means that US capital is testing the water here to see whether what they think it's something that's real. And if they do decide that it's real, then you've got the international comparators. There are rare earth companies out there worth billions. And I'm not saying this will be a £1 billion company. I'm really, really not. But
I am.
You can. Stranger things have happened, and not even stranger things. You know, like when you find the big tier one thing, this is how it goes in junior resource. This is why we're all here. You know, the whole point of it is to find something that is massive and large and hugely scaled and could sell for hundreds of millions. And I think that there's such a refusal to believe, even now. You know, what the share price was a few months ago was at what, 0.2, and now we're closing in
Oh,
on
no,
9p.
0.25 when it all kicked off.
Yeah, so when I wrote that initial article, we were at 0.25, and now we're closing in on 9p. That kind of share price action, there are people buying this stock who, you know, now with actual proper money at a 30 million market capitalization. And yeah, they're sophisticated investors, and we will see what they think.
So I was going to ask you, do you think people are put off by that rise? The fact that it was almost like they, you know, maybe those assets weren't even announced in Namibia at that point. You know, you couldn't buy it when at that value maybe until, and then they announced it, and obviously there was a big run on. But also there was an RNS this week, which reinforced the belief that the assets have the tier one potential, and that there was a gross in-house project valuation of around $400 million. For the verified near surface mineralized carbonatite, so that was just the on surface or the near surface. I mean,
I came
what
to the
else is there? Are we, you know, it's
well,
potential is huge, right?
well I came to the same number for the surface, and obviously if you go into depth and it goes all the way down to depth, you could be an absolute monster. I think you know, a lot of people go look at the rise and go, well, it's done like 3,000-4,000% or whatever it is in a few months. And you think, oh, it probably could do with a breather. All you have to do is look at the comparators, right? If you look at the comparators for other companies out there, other tier one assets out there, it could have so much further to run. And I think my mistake in the past in terms of in stocks like these is selling out too early. And maybe it wasn't a mistake because I didn't have as much money before. So when you've got less money, you
I
need
think
to,
you're right.
yeah.
I think it's back to what we said at the beginning, the emotion side. You got emotional, you saw it rise, you thought, I've got to take everything off the table. But in fact, there's nothing wrong with taking something off the table. But
Well, I think
actually, if you let it run and you look back in, you know, 2 or you know, a year's time and think, why was I knocking them out at 8p, you know, when in reality they're now 80p, you know what I mean? That's
When you have when you don't have much money, right, and then you see a
correct.
single trade and you've got the cash to pay off your mortgage, it's very hard not to sell at that point. When you've got a bit of cash in the bank, you can go, yeah, either come, either go. You know, you can relax a little bit more, you just can.
Absolutely. Okay, and in terms of other movers and shakers on the share pad, I have got the best riser was Turn. They Turn. They released an RNS this week that they explaining that they'd increase their exposure to portfolio company Talking Medicines by converting around £87,000 of debt owed by Turn and investing a further £48,000 in exchange for approximately £270,000 of new convertible loan notes. Turn's equity stake remains unchanged at 23.8%, while its total convertible loan note holding in Talking Medicines rises to around £790,000. Management said the funding will support Talking Medicines' growth as it continues to develop its AI-driven healthcare advertising intelligence. So, good rise for them this week, nearly 100% up. Red Capital as well up 90%, and Cell BX Health up 82%. So, three companies within the sort of would you say pharma space, biopharma space, they're doing well,
Well,
leading the
Red Capital with going to be Apertura Energy is going into Venezuela, so it's a little bit
Okay.
different. This one, you know, I'll state myself on here. I think this one's going to absolutely rocket over the next few weeks. You know, caveats, risk, et cetera, but the names behind it, the money behind it, it's we're on to a winner. Obviously the market agreed so far, but we will see what next week brings.
Very good. Anything else you want to mention? ARC Minerals had a good week, 33% up. Give us a little update on ARC, Charles. I know you've
Well,
talked about them in the past.
the legals have been resolved, thank God, finally, and now they can we can basically start again. If you look at the history of the Botswana assets are pretty strong as they are, but if you look at the history of Zambia, where a major has walked away and then they've done it themselves, you know, those licenses I think are pretty good. They're going to go drill them at some point, and then hopefully we find the jackpot and we put all this mess behind us. It's as simple as that, really. But you know, obviously there's been a fair bit of dilution, so you know your choices are to buy more shares to retain where you know where you were in the past, or to just, you know, sit it out. I think hopefully now we've put this behind us, it should come back, you know, to a more reasonable valuation in the near future. The only other thing I would like to highlight is their Blanchard Resources. They put out an RNS today, which, you know, upgraded their DFS, but more importantly, it confirmed that financing partners for phase one are in the data room. And you know, so basically that tells you what you need to know. Let's wait for the outcome of those conversations. What I would say is that those financing conversations, they can be pretty short, or they can take longer than you expect. So there's a good chance that they'll be, keep an eye on the chart basically and look for a technical entry, because I think it is a good buy, but it's hard to know exactly when to press the buy button because the volatility there is going to be crazy because of speculation, just before financing contract is just going to be all over the place.
Well, my comment is a bit more than just look at the weekly thing. I know you put something out a while back, Charles, about 10 baggers, and we've had a few of those, obviously, with Delta Gold and Kendrick in the near past. I think Bazant is going to be one of them as well. So, I wrote myself a list of 12 that I thought I've got a good chance of doing it. So yeah, maybe over the next weeks we'll talk about those. But anything pop into your head, Phil or Charles, that you think that's going to do well that we haven't talked about?
No, that's it. I think what I actually had, I had a high net worth investor call me yesterday and was saying like we're kind of bored with 10 baggers, we want 100 baggers. And I was looking at my mark and I was like, I can think of one or two that could do it, but maybe that's a podcast for another day where we say, look, there could be 100 baggers, you might lose all your money. But I reckon there's a few out there on the market right now in this environment that are waiting for that 100x. And we haven't had one of those in a pretty long time. Grayling got to 71x, I think. The last one I know was a oil exploration shell, out in the Middle East back in the 2000s. But I reckon we're going to see a 100x.
Well, I genuinely think Kendrick could do 100x.
Well,
From the low,
from point two
point two
five pence,
five.
it only needs 25p.
Only, yeah. So when it hits 25p, that's your 100 bagger, and then
Well, once it breaks through the 10p mark, which it's going to be testing soon, I think
yeah.
it's easily going to, it only needs to double, do 100% from there, and you're at 20, you've got your 20p mark, haven't
I
you,
don't
right
know.
there?
Okay, I've got to say, Phil, that's the best technical analysis I've ever heard.
Yeah,
Nothing could possibly go wrong.
nothing could possibly
It's
go
going to
wrong
break
here.
through 10p, and all it has to do is double, right?
Yeah, but a doubling when it's done, as
And
Kev
then
said.
just and then 50% more, and then we're there.
And we're
And then,
there.
yeah. But I
Yeah.
think,
It's the
yeah.
reversal factor that's the worrying one, though, isn't
Yeah,
it?
well,
When it
it's
drops
when
to
it's next
90.
week and it's at 25p. We're
Okay,
like, well, we've
so
100 bag now. What?
I'm gonna give you a teaser of the three that I've got, and it's not the top three because we don't know. It's a list, but my top three that I think are gonna 10 bag in the next, let's give it
I
12,
can guess one of
18
them. I
months.
know one of them.
Oh, yeah. Kendrick's at 9p now, by the way. It's up
Yeah,
10%.
that's what I mean. Yeah,
Yeah.
AEG will be one of Kev's Active Energy Group.
Okay,
Yeah.
so three that I'll give you, I think Extract Resources is going to do it over the next 12 to 18 months, with something's going to come out the woodwork in Australia for Bushranger. Phil was right. The second one is Active Energy. Just totally focused on AI doesn't work without electricity. If we don't have the right electricity supplies for these AI proposals, then it isn't happening. Like, it isn't happening. So I think the ability to provide low cost energy for these things is going to be absolutely fundamental. And then the third one is Aterian, because of the trading, the tantalum deal that they've got in HHCK, I think it is, in Rwanda. And then I think the Lithisquare thing is going to be bigger than anybody believes. I mean, Lithisquare's raised $25 million there recently. They're in partnership with Aterian in Morocco and Botswana. Yeah, I could go on, but I'm not. I'll leave it with those three. Yeah, Charles is going to
Yeah.
help me actually write. He's going to send me some crayons, and I'm going to write about why I think these things are going to do them.
You're welcome to. Well, I'll just send you the green crayon maybe, and that's all you need, and
Don't
just
eat.
scribble
Just
on the chart.
don't eat them. Whatever you do.
Yeah. Right, gents, I'm going to the beach. I think we've had a good podcast. Is there anything else? I think that's it, aren't we? Pretty
Well,
much.
by now we'll know who's won the Champions League.
Yeah, Champions
Yeah.
League, Arsenal. Right, who you going for? Arsenal or Paris Saint-Germain? I mean, I'm going PSG.
Well, first of all, I want to congratulate both Aston Villa and Crystal
Crystal
Palace.
Palace, yeah.
If Arsenal actually win it, we've got had a clean sweep in England of the European scenarios. What I would say is there are plenty of Arsenal fans who I know who I'd be very happy that Arsenal won, and there are a few that I'd be very happy if Arsenal lost. Now, the question is, who is the better team? I think PSG is a better team. And I
Definitely.
think on the day. If the problem is, Arsenal have got a fantastic defence. This is the problem. But I think if PSG play offensively, you know, well, then I don't think Arsenal can beat them.
Okay, well, I will say, Charles, thanks very much for appearing, and you know, have a great weekend. Enjoy your time on the beach.
My last comment would be just thanks to everybody who's listened over the last 5 years. We accept that we do talk some crap sometimes, but we hope you've got some knowledge from it, some insight into the company, some insight into the personalities of the CEOs, which was our intention in the first place. So we're hoping that that stands, and we will continue to do it for the next 5 years. Let's see.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for listening. Or if you do like we've heard, please do subscribe, hit the bell icon for further notifications of future episodes. And have a great weekend all.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.